Shut up, I love it.
Shut up, I love it forever. Shut up, I love it forever. Spring break forever too. Shut up, I love it. This is Joe Cabello and I'm here with
Sasha Feiler. And this is Shut Up, I Love It, a podcast where we talk about things that are forgotten, misunderstood, not loved enough.
Misaligned, someone once
misaligned.
Said.
Misaligned. We keep bringing it back. Joe, who is here in the studio today?
We got a comedian and writer whose jokes you could see on Comedy Central and HBO and heard on a bevy of TV shows, including CW's Legends of the Hidden Temple, Netflix's Historical Roast, and Discovery's BattleBots, one of my personal favorites, Jay Light.
Hello.
Welcome.
What's up, Jay Light? Give us your best BattleBot joke.
The best BattleBot line? Oh my god, it's been years. I can do the Farouk voice very... I feel like I can do that pretty well.
Oh, well, then we need to hear it. I'm very familiar with Farouk.
I remember my absolute favorite joke I ever wrote for BattleBots was something that was Mary Poppins related, just so I could get Farouk to do a pun on supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
The jokes in that show by Farouk are some of the best. Go check those out, people. BattleBots.
Yes. You can watch some whole compilations on YouTube of just Farouk jokes. It's great.
That's what exactly we're going to do after this episode. Mm-hmm. What are we here to talk about besides BattleBots, which I'm really enjoying?
We are here to talk about one of my top three movies of all time. Spring Breakers, the Harmony Korine classic from the early 2010s.
Wow. Right. So this was a big film for its Disney stars, especially Selena Gomez and Vanessa Hudgens. Mm-hmm. Bunch of girls go on spring break and get in trouble.
Oh yeah, but it's so much more than that. It's for my money, one of the absolute best satires to ever come out. One of the finest critiques of party culture. And you really, I think that it's just iconic, and people do not give this movie the love that it deserves.
You know, you saying this is your top three favorite movie of all time, I want to hear the other movies up there. Like, I want to know what Spring Breakers sharing that space with.
It's very, because the rest of the movies in there, I think, are more conventionally loved with the other. I would put There Will Be Blood is my number one. Mm.
Conventionally and, loved, yes.
Yeah. And Fantastic Mr. Fox, the Wes Anderson animated film, as number two.
And Spring Breakers right there at the top.
Right after that.
Yeah.
And I definitely have a lot of opinions on this movie that we got to get into. But first, I want to know why you think this, or what category of Shut Up, I Love It you think this lands in. It being a movie that was a pretty big release, had our big Disney stars, gets talked about. So where do you think this lands?
I would say, more than anything, this movie is misunderstood. Mm-hmm. I think. Well, because it's a very easy movie to misunderstand, too, because you look at it and you look at the poster and you look at who's in it and you immediately develop an opinion of this movie. And it's very hard to divest yourself from that opinion once it's developed, even as you watch some of the beautiful scenes that happen in this movie.
Yeah,
even
especially
as you're watching the every time montage or the look at my shit scene. It's great.
Yeah, I think you're spot on about it being misunderstood for sure. A lot of the aesthetics of it don't help that.
You and know. Harmony Korine's name is just immediately makes you be like, oh, it's the creepy dude like who, you know, did like a wasn't kids and he's written
Gummo.
A bunch of
And now he's an older guy doing this about
right
about all these young girls.
And one of those young girls also is his wife.
Right.
Was
she a wife at the time already, or is she became a wife as a result of the movie?
She was his wife already. I think they had married off of a previous movie that she was in of his that he had done. Mm-hmm. But this is the other thing. I haven't seen, besides Spring Breakers and The Beach Bum, which I also think is underrated, those are the only Harmony Korine movies I have ever seen.
Mm, same. Except lacking Beach Bum. This is the only Harmony Korine movie I've ever seen. I've seen some clips of Kids, although not directed by him. So can we really call it a Harmony Korine movie?
It's got the Harmony Korine sheen.
The Harmony. We're in the Harmony Korinescence right now, and it's not part of
that episode. For sure, we are.
We're bringing it back. Sasha, was this something? And was Harmony Korine on your radar before
Harmony
this podcast?
Korine was on my radar. I remember growing up in Siberia, and people were like young children, and they were like, "Do you know there's a movie called Detki, which means kids in Russian? Like kids, like it's like kids fucking doing drugs." And I remember, like, I did not have access to just like watch movies. So I was like, that sounds insane. Like, I was fascinated. And then eventually, years later, I saw Kids. And, you know, I was like, okay, that's Kids. And then
impressed, it sounds
when
like.
I was
those certainly were the kids.
And then when I was getting ready for this episode of the podcast, I told my husband, I'm going to watch Spring Breakers. And he said, you saw it. And I said, I have not seen it. He said, you totally saw it. And I said, do you think maybe we started watching it? And I said, I don't want to watch it. He's like, no, you saw the whole thing. And you didn't like it. And I said, did I sleep through it? He said, probably. So this is interesting. I slept through it the first time I saw it. Which is shocking, because it's not the kind of movie you would sleep through.
I can kind of see it's got some lullaby-ishness to it with repetition and scenes
like
that kind of
float.
Just like those
crotch shots. I mean, they definitely put me there.
Yeah. Whenever there's not dubstep crashing and pounding into your ears, yeah, the score is a little. It could put you to sleep a little bit.
The beginning of a Fast and Furious movie. They just use B-roll of the intro of a Fast and Furious movie for a lot of this movie. So you saw it already. I actually have never seen it until recently for this podcast.
Very recently.
Because not being a Harmony Korine fan, not necessarily being interested in the subject matter, it wasn't on my radar. It was like on my watch list way low. I knew I would get to it at some point, but needed the reason.
The fate decided.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A podcast about things that are disliked would bring me to it. So yeah, it was my first time seeing it, and I think it's probably a good thing, because we have to go into these movies, especially that we watch for this podcast, with an open mind, like, oh, there's something to see here. And I wonder if I would have seen it without that I would have just maybe disregarded it too early. But let's get into it. Before we even get into the movie, Jay, have you been on Spring Break?
I have actually been on Spring Break.
Tell us everything.
Yeah. It was not one of the absolute, like, Lake Havasu, Panama City Beach, super crazy ones. But I did do a Spring Break in Florida one year. I think it was my sophomore year of college. And I had a friend of mine who was from Florida. A bunch of us drove down. And his family lived on this place called Sanibel Island, which is a very sleepy, like, sort of Florida Keys-ish kind of town. Much more like the Beach Bum than Spring Breakers. But we were like, well, we got to go do a spring break day one day. So we drove up to, Fort Lauderdale. And they had some of the classic, like, spring breaky tropes. Where they had, like, the booty-shaking contest. And they had a bunch of college kids who were too tan, you know, drinking out of solo cups because otherwise they were going to get tickets on the beach. And
throwing alcohol on each other very disrespectfully as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people being loud in, like, motels. That was all that was there.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. And, Sasha, I assume you have not had too much of a spring break experience.
Anything before age 19 is a blur, because I have no relation to anything American culture before age 19. And that I was like in Brooklyn College. So there's not even a dorm. You just get by. You just live and work.
Your dorm is taking the subway back to not
yes,
your home.
I slept so back. Much on that subway. It was my home. I learned how to grasp onto my bag really actively while getting rest. It was great. No
it sounds
experience.
Like
spring
a breaking. Sounds fun. Yeah, and I myself have never actually done a proper spring break trip. I've done some like Santa Barbara trips that were somewhat had the spring break vibe because Halloween
like?
There is crazy. Halloween oh, there feels okay. like spring break. Like everybody's just walking the streets, drinking, get into a lot of trouble. But so yeah, this kind of was disconnected for me as far as the experience. And I know a lot of people, it is formative to kind of do this type of spring break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a lot of friends in college who did, and I never really, like, even the time that I did, like, a more traditional spring break, it still didn't feel nearly as insane as some of the stories I heard from my friends. And then, of course, this movie takes it and pitches it up to a whole new, completely out there level. But it was so... I think part of why the reason why this movie, it hit me right because I watched it. I had just finished college and I had just moved out here. And I was so at that time just like sick of what had happened in college. I was already very disillusioned. I was in a fraternity, so I was very... At the time, by the tail end of my time in college, I was very disillusioned with fraternity life. Mm. I was like, this is all so pointless. Everybody's doing the exact same thing all the time. I was very like writing. I was in creative writing classes, writing like aimless essays about like the emptiness of frat boys.
Oh, perfect fodder. I'm sure no one else was writing such things at the time.
Nobody in those classes, all those other people in classes rolled their eyes at me, but I was like, no, this is meaningful. I promise you. But it's hard to humanize a frat boy. I totally understand that now. But this, I think, it caught me at the right time because I watched this movie and I was like, this gets it. This nails the emptiness and then what that leads to in the most extreme version possible.
So let's transition from that into what makes this not just some exploitation film about a bunch of, let's get a bunch of Disney princesses sexy mm-hmm. and have them get violent and whatnot. Why is it just that to you or is it more?
I think it's more than that. I actually think part of it is that it is selling you something that it is that you're not actually given. The whole idea of like, all right, we're gonna make this like we're gonna take these Disney princesses and sex them up a little bit, doesn't really happen. Like all of the titillation in this movie is decidedly not fun to look at.
Feels dangerous.
It feels dangerous and gross. Like even I think from the opening sequence on where it's a bunch of people, you know, dancing around on the beach. It's to that one Skrillex song that was really popular at the time. But all the colors are a little bit off. Like mm-hmm. it's a little bit too yellow and orange and all the people look a little bit emaciated but they're still like you look at them and their faces are like we're having a great time, but you look at their bodies and you're like, oh, these people have no idea what a good time is. Like this is unfortunate to look at that they put themselves in this situation.
Yeah, like being the only sober person at the party at 4 a.m. and looking around and being like, oh my god, that could have been me.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that carries out throughout kind of the whole movie where you are watching these girls get themselves into situations where they think they're going to have a great time, and then slowly the peeling back of how bad of a time they're going to have and how bad of a time it all is, I think that's where it really sings as a movie.
And especially it really works having their pre-canceled James Franco.
Yes.
It's all like they knew. Perfect casting.
Perfect casting. James Franco playing a creep. We all had no idea how method he was going to go later on in life.
He was already going method. We just didn't know this whole time. And then it all came out. Yeah. So he definitely... And he's doing a great job, by the way, just embodying that creepy character.
Mm-hmm.
The culture vulture.
Yes. Yeah, I remember when this movie came out, I was like, I can't believe that James Franco's not getting awards attention for this movie. Because he's so unhinged and so good at playing that, like, the skeevy white guy rapper role.
Yeah, it
was
really
very
worked.
Threatening, but also seductive at the same mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm.
You could see why these girls did that.
Oh, we all could see that.
Yeah.
Sasha, I wonder with you watching it, what was your take on what this movie is?
I kind of took it for the face, like in the face value of there's just a lot of titties, a lot of crotch shots. It's Harmony Korine. Like, he comes out of Larry Clark's, you know, crew of exploiting and shocking people with, you know, having young people have sex. So, I mean, like, here's the thing. After I watched the movie, I said to myself, it's a pretty good movie. Like, it's not a bad movie. It's the editing is amazing. And I started like, kind of like, the editing is great. The camera work is great. Like, mm-hmm. all the, it's all good stuff. I was just like, it just kind of didn't land hard for me. I landed softly. I was like, oh, okay. And then they all get bad and they kind of pay for it. But the satire, I don't know, maybe it's me and satire in general. It didn't like land, like, oh my God, like, what a satire of American culture. But it honestly could be because I'm just taking it the face value because I've never been to a spring break. And to me, it's the most American thing that could ever be, is that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I mean, but like, aren't people watching this film a lot of times just to see the booty shake? And I'm like, they probably are.
Well, so yes, so, something that's participating and something that's criticizing at the same time.
Yeah,
there's probably a lot of people who are watching this on a bar television with the sound off.
I can't mm-hmm. imagine. And there's some haunting imagery at the end with the white hooded women mowing mm-hmm. down mm-hmm. Black people. Mm-hmm. So to me, like, I really disliked watching this movie, but I was like, well, this is a really good movie. It's right. Like, I'm disliking it. I don't think it's supposed to be liked. You know, it's showing really awful things. Mm-hmm. And I was just surprised that it felt like a very pointed movie about race while also not being very pointed at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like not subtle, but I think you kind of lose that in all the countless breasts,
mm-hmm.
just kind of nonsensory. It's hard to get your footing with this movie because of the editing too, which is the coolest part.
The coolest part.
You know, things you're not sure how you're seeing things. You feel drunk watching it. But that, like, it's anytime I like stop a movie and I'm like, I did not like that, then I'm like, all right, I got to think about this more. And then it's usually showing something a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this movie definitely doesn't make you comfortable. And it seems like, you know, if you look at the posters or if you look at the advertising for it, then, yeah, maybe you think, oh, okay, well, this is just going to be it could be a darker exploitation movie. But I think because of how uncomfortable the movie is designed to make you, you know, even some of the scenes that are not like overtly, you think of like, oh, what's going to happen whenever they play Every Time, and it's going to be this great Britney Spears song and he's going to play the piano on the beach and it's going to be fun. But then you have the deep discomfort of watching people like do a ring around the rosy but with shotguns.
Yeah.
It's right. So uncomfortable.
Or arguably the most uncomfortable scene of the film, the gun fellatio scene.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
The set piece. The iconic. Central set piece. Iconic. Where, what happens in that? Jay, would you describe to the audience?
So they, this is coming pretty fresh off of the look at my shit scene, which is another great comedic set piece in this movie. And all we have left at this point, girls wise, is Vanessa Hudgens and Ashley Benson from Pretty Little Liars. And they're with James Franco, and they have a gun, and they put it, they basically like make it seem like they're going to kill him and take all of his shit that he just told them to look at. And he sucks the gun off like it's a penis, and really plays into it, goes hard on that gun.
Mm-hmm. Puts two in his mouth at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's I was nervous because of her finger on the trigger the whole time. That definitely made
he probably
me a little
was
nervous.
Too. I mean, you know.
Yeah. But if you're nervous, I mean, that's what they always say in improv class. You just write. You just lean into it. Yes, and clearly.
So I put a gun in my mouth and sucked it off while I watched the movie.
Exactly. I was like, oh, I gotta feel how this feels.
Yeah. Yeah, no, James Franco sure leaned in. He followed all the yes and rules, and he added, you know, he second beat it. He second beat it off right there. Right there. That scene is going to stay with me for a while. I'm going to put it this way. In a good way.
I'm surprised I hadn't heard about it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it's just the way I've heard people talk about this movie. People haven't talked about this movie in the way that I would think they would have after seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's because they get stuck.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's hard to talk about without watching it, I think, at least more than once, or if you're not watching it on a sort of analytical, critical level, it's hard to talk about. Because you can't really classify it in the way that you would expect to. It throws your expectations off. And there is so much crazy shit that happens throughout the movie that some of the moments that are not quite as like overtly crazy, even though they are crazy in context, like the gun fellatio scene, those kind of just get, you know, lost in the shuffle.
How many times have you seen this movie, Jay?
I have seen this movie at least 5 times,
mm-hmm.
maybe closer to 10, but
besides,
I've watched this movie and I've had people turn this movie off midway through because they didn't like it. And I'm like, no, you don't get it.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you show your friends this, like what prompts you to seek the uncomfortable experience of watching this movie over and over? Is it usually just to be like, hey, my BFF, here's the movie that I enjoy. Do you want to enjoy it as well?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. I've tried to get people to watch this movie. I have there's a lot of movies that I love that a lot of people I don't think have seen as far as in my friend group goes. And I always love the experience of watching a movie for the first time with somebody when I know what's going to happen.
And watch them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And this movie's a great movie for that because it's such an overload that sometimes if you only know that it's a movie with Vanessa Hudgens and Selena Gomez and James Franco doing a riffraff impression, then you don't know what you're really getting into.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky. But I just love this movie. I love a movie that can continually, and I think this is part of why it's one of my all-time favorites, I love a movie that can continually bring me to a place every time I watch it where I still feel the way I did the first time I watched it. And that's that's a really tough thing to pull off in any sort of art, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I still get that, like, that very visceral experience of, oh, not only is this a great critique, but it also is deeply, like, it really sticks in your craw. Like, it really gets in there. It really makes you have that that uncomfort, the discomfort, the unsettled feeling that I felt the first time I watched it. and continue to.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where you're like, I wish this ended different, and I'm watching it, and it's not ending different every time, yeah. And it stings. Yeah.
Have you seen Zola?
No, I haven't seen Zola yet.
It's I'm going to go ahead and say that's a close cousin of this film.
Double feature?
It's a double feature material for sure. As a person who walked out of Zola, though, I am probably not the best person.
How about Zohan?
What is that?
Don't mess with the Zohan?
Don't mess with the Zohan.
Any similarities there?
Not that I know of.
Probably not.
But Zola is, to me, is an unfortunate cousin of this film. Like, it's a lesser version of Spring Breakers. Made by a brilliant director.
Well, based off of a Twitter story, you know, it's not going to aim, it's not going to hit the same, like, levels of satire and weirdness.
Yeah. Right.
It's interesting that I thought Harmony Korine made this movie, Spring Breakers, like more like a sensory experience. I'm sure you read the Wikipedia article, y'all, where he says like he wanted to make not so much of a story, but like story to come out of it. More he was looking for the sensory experience for the audience to watch and feel things. And I think he really did it. Like he, as an auteur, he really did the thing of, you know, like UJ saying, just always just getting to you every time. Mm-hmm. As a person who saw it first time, I have no memory of seeing it. but the second time, it sure was creepy. And it definitely is like a hard movie to talk about because you have to watch it and be like, no, you don't understand. Like when it's out of sync, like cutting away, you know, jumping forward, but you still have the lines from a different scene. Like it just all creates this like disorienting, chaotic vibe and the flow that you're like... It's really hard to sort of look away, which is great because a lot of times you look away when you watch a film these days.
You would want to look away, but there's, you know, because all of the parts that you are watching and you're hearing, you know, lines being repeated over and over again, there's certain ways that those are framed too, where you can look at it and it's like, oh, there's a reason these lines are being repeated. It's because the girls are trying to psych themselves up to rob a chicken shack or something like that.
How did everybody feel about, like, because they keep saying, like, just logically, and I'm just curious if it's, like, my brain freaking out. But it's, like, because they were, like, they really were using the, what, paint guns or something, right? Like, spray paint guns?
Squirt guns.
Squirt guns or something, like, they were just using, like, toy guns. Black. Yeah, exactly. But they were keep saying, oh, we were able to pull it off. And they played the scene of them robbing a couple of times. And every time I watch it, and I'm like, I guess because they got him by surprise, because it doesn't look almost, it looks disturbing, but it doesn't look like it's real either, like the real robbery. Does anybody feel that? Does anybody
I think there are two POVs. There's the POV outside in the car, the getaway car, which is the reality, I think. And then you have the more colorized, stylized, like actually inside that they cut to. And I think that's the girl's memory more so.
Yeah, because that scene, that one plays when they're talking about it later on.
Showing off.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Look, it's always felt to me like, oh, like, did it, could really the people, everybody bought it. Everybody bought this young woman wearing hoodies and then holding what are plastic guns. But I guess, you know, when something's pointing at your...
They had hammers,
you
too.
You don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Hammers.
The hammer.
Yeah. You don't want to get hit by a hammer. Mm-hmm. And maybe there was even, I think, less people there in reality than in their dream. So, like, I think there's a lot that we're not to believe of that situation. But then again, they go kill a bunch of people in a scene from Grand Theft Auto.
And what's interesting is that James Franco's death, right? Like, his characters is very, like, oh, oops, he died.
It's so abrupt, yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't even get his gun up.
That's how, and that's the other thing, too. It's like, that's part of the great arc of James Franco's character in this, is that he talks such a huge game, but he's so incompetent that at, like, the raid that he and the other girls had planned, and they were like, we're going to go take revenge, he is immediately killed.
And they don't stop. There's no moment for him. There's not even cutaway shot, I don't think, of him dying or something. It's just they keep walking. Oh, he died. Let's just keep walking.
They got a mission.
They've already got 3 stars. They got to get 5.
Yeah. And do we ever follow up with what happens to the women who leave? Like, because the women who are just like, I'm fed up. I'm getting out of here. Like Selena Gomez.
No, Selena Gomez exits quick.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, she gets out right about the halfway point. I think maybe a little bit before that. Mm-hmm. And then Harmony Korine's wife also disappears.
Cotty.
Yeah, after getting, after getting injured, the lifestyle's not for her.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. They just take a bus back to wherever they came
from. No follow-up.
I think they're just fine.
Moral.
They're
the moral
good.
Of the story, yeah, is... What is the moral of this story, Jay? Is there a moral of this film?
I don't think there is a moral.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's... And that's, I think, another thing that I like about it is that it's not really a morality... In terms of, like, providing a moral, the only moral is, hey, don't do crime and murder people. It's going to fuck with your head. But all of the other stuff leads to that. And I think it's not necessarily about, like, coming out of this story with an answer. It's more about, like, watching these characters just descend into these criminal depths.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps, you know, maybe their predisposition to do it anyway. They seemed a little bit more wild than Selena Gomez. They're certainly not going to church groups and singing prayers at the beginning of the movie.
Do you both think that they enjoyed the actual spring break, like minus the criminal escalation of it all?
I ask, is there any difference in their spring break to the criminal escalation?
Because there was a criminal act prior to the spring break?
They're just like, to them, that was spring break.
That's spring break forever.
Mm, that's powerful.
I think,
it's not like it stops being spring break for them when they do crime. No, to them, they're like, this is so cool still.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think to harken back to the emptiness of that lifestyle, I think that so early on, they had an out to recognize, like, oh, this isn't going to really do a whole lot, right? When they get arrested for the first time, when they're throwing their party at the hotel, they could have gotten out right there. But then if they did, there would be no movie because it's too early on. Mm-hmm. We have to see them descend more. We have to see them succumb to their baser, more criminal desires. And I think that they finally do come around and recognize how empty it all is, and you can't live spring break forever.
But you can get away with murder and be fine and learn.
I wouldn't say they're fine, though. Like, they're fine from a standpoint of, like, okay, we got out, we didn't get arrested, we didn't get killed. But I think they are definitely, by the end of the movie, dealing with the psychological effects of what they've done. Mm-hmm. Like, they came out of the keg stand and are like, oh, man, I'm going to puke.
Yeah, but I think it's, to them, it's still the weight of, like, having drank too much the night before. Uh-huh. For them, they got the same profound message as people who would just do that and be like, oh, you know what, partying is too much. But for them, they had to slay a bunch of people.
Right.
Jay, any other thoughts on Spring Breakers before we get into some ratings?
I think if you haven't watched it, people who are listening, audience listening to this podcast, go watch it. If you had any sort of preconceived notions about what this movie was about, just give it a whirl. And if you don't want to watch that, at the very least, go watch the Every Time sequence on YouTube, which is just chef's kiss. Just fantastic.
The bee's knees.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know how much they might enjoy it in a vacuum, but...
it's truly the cat's meow. That's what I'm going to say about it.
The J-Light cat's meow, Mark.
Yo, do you think we're ready now to go to the ratings?
Not quite. Give it another 30 seconds, maybe 40. Let's cook it a little bit. Okay, here's how the ratings work. We're going to rate Spring Breakers on a scale of 0 to 10 using something else as a reference point. That other thing can be a movie, a TV show, a book, a type of sandwich. So a salami sandwich is a 7, classic, but a little too salty. Spring Breakers is a 10 because it's great. Whatever you want to do. And if that doesn't make sense, I'll go first. You'll go first?
I'll go first.
Yes, please, go first.
Yeah, I already mentioned Zola that I walked out of. I actively walk out of a good number of movies. Not like aggressively large, but every 10th movie for sure I walk out of. And I watch a lot of movies in the theaters. So,
brag.
What's that?
Brag.
Brag, a little humble brag.
Got the confidence to walk out of movies in theaters.
Yes.
God, if only I had the confidence to do that. I've seen, the only movie I've ever walked out of is Wild Hogs when I was a teenager.
Oh, good for
and
you.
And I should have walked out of many more since then.
Famously walked out of Inside Out that my improv friends still haven't forgiven me for.
Wow.
I stand by that decision. But this is not an Inside Out moment. This is a moment to compare Spring Breakers 2012 to Zola 2021, question mark? What's happening to me? I'm dying slowly.
Yeah, I don't know if this is like a tactic to make it more suspenseful. It's working.
So people kind of first develop empathy for me, and then they enjoy what I have to say. I'm going to give Zola a 3, a very generous 3. Like, good for you, director of Zola. You made a movie. I don't like it. I walked out of it. Sorry, I'm slowly dying. Those people don't deserve to be. They don't deserve to be made a movie about. It's not. Maybe it's a satire, but there's a lot of like shots that don't make sense to me about like a shot of like a woman urinating in the toilet and showing what she urinated into it. But then like there's no. I don't know. It's weird. Watch Lemon instead. The lady director with the woman. She made a. Great Lemon. Lemon is a better movie with Brett Gelman. Anyway, Zola is a 3 and Spring Breakers is a 7.5.
Oh, not too bad. All I didn't expect that high from you of this movie.
Yeah, I think once we got a little intellectual here on this podcast, it's one of those cases
it
where...
It grew a little bit. What was it going to be pre-podcast?
A 5.
Okay, still not too bad. But
7.5. Not terrible.
High.
It's a good movie. Yeah. And now it's like intellectually good movie as well for me.
So they say.
Joe, what about you?
I'm going to compare this to another movie that I didn't necessarily like, but I appreciated. And it's kind of on the polar opposite of messaging somewhat to this movie. And that's Nia DaCosta's Candyman. So this like Spring Breakers starts with them in a college like lecture about the Civil War, like Reconstructionism, and they're not paying attention. And there are later these girls who go adopt a lot of the like hip hop styles and black, you know, basically culture vulturing with. What's his name? James Franco. And then they go and murder like the most successful black man in that area. Like this movie is the polar opposite of Candyman, which is about taking back Candyman's name and power for justice, social justice. But I think they're very similar in that I found them both kind of not really that fun or pleasant to watch, but I appreciate what they did. Candyman, I'm going to give a 7. I'm going to give Spring Breakers. Oh, what's happening? An 8.
Ooh. Close to me, but you build it up. Like you, once again, Joe, you did the thing of like, which way is he going to go?
You never know. And I'm just making it up on the spot. No, I do... I don't know. This is a movie I will urge other people to watch through a specific lens, especially if I can. I think it's valuable and worth watching. And I think it's so weird. It gets a point over Candyman because it's so unique, bizarrely edited in a good way, and sensory, that is just very cool. You could enjoy it past even the commentary elements.
Yeah, and good filmmaking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thoughtful, mm-hmm. Very thoughtful, thoughtfully made. So yeah, 8.
Okay.
Jay, most importantly.
Most importantly. Well, I feel, you know, I as much as I do in my movie brain want to compare this and rate it on a scale to another movie, I feel it is only appropriate to rate this on a scale of alcoholic beverages that one might consume on a spring break.
Ooh.
An alcoholic beverage that you'd consume on a spring break is like a light beer, like a Natty Light. It's like a 3, right? Like, it's only there because it's cheap. You're broke college students. What else are you going to do? You know, and you'd rather not buy, like, a handle of Taka vodka, which is also not that high. It's probably like a 2, but it gets the job done. But Spring Breakers is, for my money, Spring Breakers is underrated beauty that, like, you sleep on, but as soon as you recognize how important it is and how much value it provides and what it is capable and what it brings to the table, you're like, this is all I'm sticking with. So to me, Spring Breakers is like a 40 of King Cobra, you know, like it's got a lot of value in there. It really gets the job done.
Almost poisonous.
But exactly, yeah. And you don't want to have, you can't, you definitely feel uncomfortable after drinking a whole 40 of King Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit sick because it's got that sort of lemony, orangey, citrusy flavor to it. But damn, if it isn't effective.
Wow, the most creative scale, shut up, I love it ever experience, I would say.
Yeah, that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Wow. Jay, thank you so much for coming out. Shut up, I love it. Talking to us about Spring Breakers, getting me to actually watch it in the way that I remember watching
it. Oh, no, that's key, yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad you will never forget this movie now. I'm glad we've got it stuck in your brain.
It is in my brain now. Jay, where can our audience find you?
You can find me at Diet Jay on all the social media platforms. And if you want to hear me talk more about movies, you can listen to my podcast, Blockbusting, where I have people on talk about movies they hate and why they hate them.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. The bizarro. Shut up.
It's definitely the bizarro.
Joe, what's going on with you?
Oh, go check out joecabello.com. You could link to my Patreon where you could read my novella, Technovirus. There's a few chapters left of the whole book that you can get on Patreon. So sign up, a buck or two. No big deal.
And if you're wanting to enter a writing fellowship in the city of Hollywood, take my writing class on scriptandabby.com. Spec Lab class with Sasha Feiler. Thank you, Elizabeth Salute, for this artwork. Thank you, Mr. Owl, for this amazing track. And thank you for listening.